Welcome back. Everybody enjoyed the weekend. This week, there is a homework assignment as well as the Tiny Box Challenge report due on Friday. The homework assignment, again like last week, is hopefully a shorter one. But looking at the schedule, I don't want to give a homework assignment next week while we're doing PCB layout. Then we've got midterm after that. And the content that we've covered is fair game for the midterm. So needed to have a shortened homework assignment this week in addition to TBC. Okay. Hopefully you've been working on that design comparison and that won't be too much of a stressor. A little bit of a shorter assignment. Comments or feedback on that? In terms of formatting, fine if it's just handwritten, whatever it is. Okay. Not, don't spend time giving a introduction and background on the problem and motivation, these kinds of things. I just want to see, okay, what did you analyze? What did you vary? How did you design these things? And then what do you think is the best path forward for this set of specs? You might have a little bit of writing in there. Say, I didn't choose this one for this reason. I didn't choose this one for this reason. I chose this for this reason. But I don't expect any additional fluff in there. You want to type it up? You want to handwrite it? That's all fine. Yeah. You have to have a schematic of it. It doesn't have to be PCB schematic. It doesn't have to be an Altium versus hand-drawn versus done in Visio or anything. But I do want to see a schematic and see that you've gone through and kind of selected implementation of everything. Make sense? Right. And that doesn't have to be, you know, complete, ready to implement. It's a, here's the topology, including gate drivers. Here's the MOSFETs, here's the gate drivers I'm gonna use, here's how I'm gonna implement the passive. Okay. So your extra sensing that you might add for the TBC, extra connections out to the modulation board, you don't have to worry about that practical stuff, just the main power stage, here's what it is, and I've looked at real components for all the parts of it. That make sense?
Yeah.
You need to think about it. Well, in the end, the design comparison report, it's your choice, right? I would recommend you think about that gate charge, but eventually for the competition, right, you're not going to measure that. It's not going to be part of what you measure because you're going to measure input to output. The power for the gate charges coming through this auxiliary board through some DC to DC converters, and you're not going to have any specification on that. Right? So anything coming from NOX wise, the control power for the FPGA, the gate charge, those things won't be part of the metric that you're assessed on for the competition. That being said, clarify that gate charge, I mean the power loss that comes through the gate driver. Gate charge also relates to other loss mechanisms. There's overlap loss, where you may, yes, need to consider gate charge to solve the actual overlap loss if you have. But the pure PG, VCC, FS won't be measured in the competition.
And you said it's not required to select component for the first assignment. How do we calculate the
without
selecting?
So, in the end, in that last section is required. That's for one of them, right? For the first, for the comparison among the three, you can decide how in depth you want to go, right? Keeping in mind that this is something that you're going to build and compete on. If you can throw one out before you even begin looking at devices, probably a bad one to select the design comparison, but leaving it kind of open-ended on what you do on the three of them to arrive at your conclusion. Okay. So hypothetically, you could say, okay, I solved this converter operation, and even before I begin looking at MOSFET devices, I can conclude that this one's going to be worse. If you can, you can. None other than, the question was, is there a frequency limitation? None other than the limitations imposed by the world we live in. But as far as the assignment, no. I can tell you a gigahertz is not going to work very well. I can tell you 0 hertz is not going to do very well on the power density. In between, up to you. There's a practical limitation in that the modulator boards that you're going to get are running a 200 megahertz clock. So they're going to have time step resolution of 1 over 200 megahertz. Okay. You can get that higher. And if you need it and your design requires that, we can talk about some FPGA coding to get higher resolution. But that'll require a little bit more work on the coding end. I can post some. I mean, the best way would be to go into IEEE Explorer and type switch capacitor, but I can post a couple of what I think are relatively high quality references on those things. More want to forget things lately, so just a note to myself. Another question? It's up to you. In the end, I would recommend that picking a topology that's going to do the best for this spec does require likely looking at some magnetics design. But this is up to you to determine how detailed you need to go to be able to arrive at a decision for which direction to go forward. Okay. So if you think you can pick one without having to go into a lot of depth on magnetics, you don't have to. This, I mean, this challenge is meant to be more practical consideration and less of a pop quiz kind of a thing. I'm not going to be real hard on, well, you didn't consider this minor detail or this minor mechanism. I just want you guys to have some experience going through and thinking about how would I approach this design problem? How do I determine what's a good starting point and how to work with it? Keep in mind, you're going to be building these things and competing on them and trying to get good performance. I recommend you put in an amount of effort that'll allow you to not hurt yourself later, right? You pick a really bad option now because you didn't put in much analysis. And then you go and you have to build that thing and it's overheating and it's got a bunch of problems. It's going to be more work down the line. But I don't plan to grade this design report on level of how precise do you get, how holistic is your optimization, more so on are you considering the correct things, are you taking them into account in a reasonable way, do you have logic behind your decision and your comparison. Okay. I expect that I'll get very different reports from each individual. Some people are going to spend a lot of time on magnetics. Some people are just going to pick an RDC for the magnetics or just pick things from DigiKey and test on that. That's okay. Okay. You shouldn't spend a bunch of time on some analysis for the purpose of, well, I think this should be in there and I'm worried about the grading. Just spend the time on the analysis that you say, this is important to figure out to determine how I'm going to build this thing. that make sense? I don't think I've explicitly mentioned it, but wide bandgap is in play here. I recommend you look at gallium nitride transistors for this voltage rating. It's really either the 100-volt devices from GaN Systems or EPC devices. I do recommend you consider those in your report, and then as you go forward in a group, selecting which one to build and how to implement it. Those are hard to solder, but it's a surmountable problem. We'll have resources to be able to do that. Other questions?
Yeah. In the last lecture, when you calculate for the average output current, I think you forgot to divide by 1/3.
I've taken that slide out. In the final result, or just in some intermediate expression?
But
the result is fine. Yeah. So those are your notes. If I did miss that 1/TS, then you're correct. The average expression integral from 0 to TS times 1/TS. I'll look back at those and maybe edit the online slides if that is the case. Picture 23. Yes, I'll check on that. Okay, one more announcement. On Friday, we'll be having a visitor coming to the department who's going to give a seminar related to his research, a professor from China. And he works on wireless power transfer. The time that worked for that seminar was during this class. So we won't have lecture on Friday. Instead, during this time, I expect you guys to all go to that seminar. The topic actually aligns quite nicely with what we're talking about now. You may see a lot of common themes between sinusoidal analysis, state plane analysis on these AC link converters, and the wireless power transfer converter. More details on that on Wednesday. We're still figuring out whether we'll just have it in here or go to a room with a little bit more seating. We'll have that cover the same time. We'll cancel lecture and have that be your lecture for the day, seminar topic, guest lecture. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Well, let's cover our content for the day. So we've been working on this sinusoidal approximation modeling. Last class, we finished our complete equivalent circuit on these AC link converters, where we replaced the rectifier and the inverter by their fundamental only equivalent circuit. We just said, model only the component of the waveforms in the inverter and rectifier, which is at the switching frequency. We have sinusoids, which is a fair approximation to the waveforms as long as we have good attenuation through the tank of this converter. As long as the tank is frequency selective, meaning it'll pass that fundamental but heavily attenuate all of the harmonics, then the majority of the power flow, the majority of dynamics are dictated by just that fundamental. And we can approximate the behavior by looking only at the fundamental. Doing that, derived these models for the inverter and rectifier, found that then really the tank under this approximation is going to dictate the behavior of the converter. Everything from the inverter and rectifier, we cancel each other out, and our conversion ratio is just equal to the transfer function of the tank evaluated at the switching frequency. And then we looked a little bit just generally at the behavior of resonant converters, found that things are going to behave really neither as voltage sources nor current sources, but have this elliptical type output characteristic, which is going to require some control to overcome if we want to regulate to constant voltage, for example. And then what I want to get into today then is just looking at the behavior of some common resonant converter tanks, leveraging that now we know that the transfer function of the tank is going to dictate the conversion ratio of the circuit. We just look at the behavior of the tank, including things like the input impedance and the transfer function. We can make some conclusions generally about the behavior of any converter built around those tanks. Okay. So in order to do so, we're going to look at those two things, the input impedance and transfer function of some different tanks. I'm going to start with just using the series resonant converter as an example. And keep in mind, given the way we've modeled this, this is the SRC with a diode full bridge rectifier. Okay. If I change around implementation of the inverter or rectifier, the same process will work, but there will be some slight changes. Excuse me. So for the SRC, when we look at the tank, what do we have? We've got our series resonance made up of LL and CR, as we've called them to date. And then what will load that will be my RE, whatever equivalent resistance is applied back by the diode rectifier. And what RE is equal to in terms of the actual load depends on the implementation for the diode full bridge rectifier. It's 8 over pi squared times R. If I have a synchronous rectifier with phase shift, this RE might become a ZE, where it could have potentially some imaginary component. It may scale differently if I did a half bridge or a doubler rectifier. Okay. But if we have this, what I want to look at is, what is the input impedance of the tank? And what is the transfer function? H of S. Okay. We'll define H of S as a transfer function from VP to VS. Okay. So these are pretty simple. I can just write out Vn is going to look like inductor impedance plus faster impedance plus this effective load resistance, all in series, looking at the input impedance. And then my transfer function, H of S, is going to be minus Vs over Vp, and that looks like an impedance divider, Re over SLL plus 1 over SCR plus Re. We can see that this numerator is just the input impedance. So it's just going to look like load resistance, equivalent load resistance, divided by the input impedance in this case. And these expressions are, of course, specific to this series resonant tank, and will change as I change the tank around. Okay. So what does this transfer function look like? If I put this in standard form, I'd have to multiply the numerator and denominator by this 1 over SCR, get all my S is flipped up in the numerator, and I'd end up with some second order term down here, S squared plus S plus the constant term. And then up here, I'd have pole at DC, or excuse me, at zero at DC, RESCR. So in standard form, H of S would look like what? S over Q QE omega naught over S over omega naught squared plus S over QE omega naught plus one, where omega naught is my resonant frequency, R naught my characteristic impedance I'm looking at, and then QE is R naught over RE. All right, I mentioned in the past, but QE is my effective Q. It is ratio of the tank resonance to this effective loading resistance RE, which is not a real resistance, right? This is the effective behavior of the rectifier under our sinusoidal approximation applied back to the tank. So as we go and look at Bode plots of these characteristics, is going to behave like a normal Q, but the physical interpretation of that Q is slightly different. Normally when we talk about Q, we're talking about, well, this inductor has some series resistance and this quality factor is a measure of how much energy loss I have per cycle of oscillation. Here, because we're relating it to RE, our effective resistance, which is the power consumed by this resistor, is the power that's actually going to the output. It's not lost. So a degradation in this QE does not necessarily mean a drop in efficiency. It just means a change in the behavior. Okay. QE is the effective or loaded quality factor. So there is a Q of just LL and CR. If I looked at that resonance in a practical implementation, I'd have some series resistance due to my implementation of the inductor and capacitor. That Q, I'd like to get as close to infinity as possible. That just means I have very small resistance relative to the impedance of my inductor, and I should have high efficiency. This QE is going to depend on the loading conditions, and I can't get that to be infinity always. The only way to get that to go to infinity would be to have zero RE, which means I have zero power going through the system. Okay. This does tell us is that as I change the loading, I am going to have some effect degrading the quality of this resonant tank. And if I go to very large RE, very large output resistance, this Q is going to get bad. That Q is bad. Depending on the tank topology, particularly true in this series resonant converter, my sinusoidal approximation is going to get worse, right? This whole thing, the sinusoidal approximation, this analysis method was built on the idea that I have a high quality factor resonant tank and only the switching frequency component will make it through. If I start significantly degrading the Q of that resonant tank, I'm going to have a flat response. All my harmonics are going to go through and the sinusoidal approximation is going to be really bad. Okay. We'll see that in a moment. So this is our overall transfer function under the sinusoidal approximation. I really only care about a single point on that because I'm assuming that there's only one frequency going through the tank. So my conversion ratio M V over G is equal to the magnitude of H at J omega S. We really only care about the magnitude of this when S is J times the switching frequency. Everywhere else, I've approximated there is zero frequency content, only a single frequency that I care about. Okay. That you can go through and solve for this transfer function. I'm just going to write the answer, which comes from the book in chapter 19. Looks like 1 over square root 1 plus QE squared 1 over F minus F squared, which I get by plugging in S is equal to J omega S and then doing some complex arithmetic to solve, applying the bottom by the complex conjugate, flipping things up, and eventually getting my expression for a magnitude here. Okay. So, just looking at these two things, we'll be able to make some broad conclusions about the behavior of the series resonant converter. Before we get into that, what are the kind of characteristics I want? I'd like things like, for example, my transfer function here, evaluated at the switching frequency, which is eventually going to tell me my converter voltage conversion ratio. I'd like that to be constant as loading changes, which would allow me to get close to having a constant output voltage across a range of loads. Now that's going to degrade depending on the converter. That would be a good thing to have, at least within some limited load range. When I look at input impedance, given my sinusoidal approximation, my input is a voltage source that depends only on the input voltage. So I'm going to have a constant sinusoidal voltage amplitude here. When I look at my input impedance, the magnitude of this at the switching frequency is going to tell me how much current I'm getting, right? I've got a constant voltage source, whatever effective impedance loads it, I'm going to tell me the current, Vp over magnitude of Vn, okay? What would I like? Well, I'd like that to be small whenever it can be. So I want kind of a large input impedance, particularly as RE increases and I go to light load. I'd like the input impedance to get large so that if I'm only delivering 1 watt, I want a very big input impedance so I have small current throughout. I'm delivering 1 watt to the output and I've got a very small input impedance. It means I'm going to have a ton of current coming in, a lot of conduction losses, even though only a little bit of power is going to the output. And then the other thing we can look at on Zn is the phase of Zn is going to dictate, really back here, phase of Zn is going to tell us the phase of the current. So I've got a voltage source has zero phase shift here. The phase of Zn is going to tell me the phase of Ip. I would like what we discussed earlier, that phase to be inductive in nature, which gives me the possibility of achieving ZVF on my inverter. Okay. If this input impedance looks capacitive at the switching frequency, that means I have no possibility of achieving ZVF. Okay. So these are the things we're going to look at as we look at Zn and H of S for some different converters. Again, using series resonant converter as an example, what I'm going to do is I want to plot Zn and H, and then we will look at as RE changes. Right. So for both of these, Zn and H are functions of L and C, which is how I design the converter. And then this RE, which is going to change depending on the output power, depending on the loading conditions outside of the converter. So these things are Zn is SLL plus 1 over SCR plus RE. H of S is RE over Zn. Okay, so we'll use the plots on log frequency axes versus magnitudes in dB, so I get log-log scales. And I'm going to construct these things just graphically here. let's say that this is F naught. Then my input impedance is made up of three impedances in series. I'm just going to plot each of those to be my asymptotic relationships. So this is magnitude of SL. This is magnitude 1 over SC. And then my magnitude of RE is going to be RE and dB, and that's going to be variable. I'll start with it somewhere down here. Hey, just graphically, when I look at these three impedances in series, Zn, magnitude of those three in series, going to look like, well, the greatest one of the three of them. I'm on log-log scales. Any vertical difference is actually really big. Everywhere except for a resonance, the series resonance tank, just LL and CR component, that impedance is going to go to zero. My effective impedance is just going to be RE. Means that the overall impedance is going to look something like this. Try again. I'm going to track these asymptotes out here. Inductor and capacitor. Then here in the middle, this resonant type behavior, the reactive component goes away. My resonance drops down to RE. Okay. There, my distance between this point and this point is going to be QE and dB. This top point is the characteristic impedance R naught. Bottom point is just RE and dB. And the distance between them is going to be QE. Okay. So that's the input impedance for one example value of this loading resistance. But that can change in general, go anywhere from open circuit to short circuit, or my effective loading can go from zero to infinity. So we want to look at how this changes as RE changes. So if I look at the extremes, RE goes to zero. I plot this in the same way, just this horizontal dashed line is going to drop all the way down to minus infinity on my dB axis, which means that my resonance is going to look like this, and it'll go all the way down to minus infinity. This will be, we'll call magnitude of ZI zero. Notationally, magnitude of ZI zero, the magnitude of ZI with RE goes to zero. And then ZI infinity, magnitude ZI, RE goes to infinity. Okay. So what'll happen is RE starts increasing. So this Q will get smaller and smaller. Eventually, RE will be somewhere up here, and I'll get a curve that looks like this. If RE increases more, I'll get a curve that looks like this. And then eventually, somewhere up here, I'll have magnitude of ZI infinity. As RE goes to infinity, RE is directly in series with everything else. It's going to dominate the overall impedance. My RE goes to infinity, my open circuit condition, my tank response, my input impedance is just flat up at infinity, okay, off the top of the plot. Okay. So what about my transfer function, H? H just looks like that resistance divided by this whole curve. Okay. So right at resonance, the impedance always goes to RE, because at resonance, these two terms cancel each other. Got plus J something, minus J something. These go away. So Zn is always RE right at resonance. So that means that H of F is always going to be unity right at resonance. And then around that, H of F, RE is going to stay the same. Zn is just going to flip, dividing it in the denominator for H of F. In a log-log scale, dividing by something is subtracting the log of it. So my H of S is just going to look like these curves flipped. And starting from here, that means when input impedance goes to zero, I have this high Q. It's going to look something like this. Well, this H, RE is zero. As I get a little bit larger, RE, it's something like this. Larger, begin to look like this. And then eventually here, what happens when RE goes to infinity? I just get flat response unity. So, what can I learn from all of this? Few things, looking at the general behavior. So I'm going to divide up and write down here what I can observe about the operation of this converter, depending on whether the switching frequency is above the resonant frequency or below it. Okay. So for switching frequencies above F0, my curves here of Zn, okay, my magnitude, my slope kind of varies, but everywhere the curve is sloping kind of up and to the right, which means it's going to be various magnitudes, but it's generally inductive in behavior. Okay. For some of these, inductance in series with a large resistance, but everything over here is sloping up and to the right, which means it'll be somewhat inductive. I go to very high resistances, get more or less flat, but are still trending slightly upward. It's going to look like a small inductance in series with a big resistance. But it's inductive, not capacitive. So I have inductive Zn over here. On the left, everywhere, it's just the opposite. I have capacitive. Why do I care about that? As we discussed before, this inductive loading of voltage source inverter is going to give me the possibility of obtaining zero voltage switching. Okay. And I can't say anything more than that it is possible over here. Whether I actually get it depends on how much energy I actually have in that inductor, how long my dead time is. Really drill in on that, I'd have to go into something like state plane analysis. But I can say it's possible over here. And over here, I can say it's not possible. No matter what, this will not get ZVF. Instead, it'll get zero current switching, kind of the inverse of CVS, rather than voltage going to zero before turning on, the current goes to zero before turning off. Except in very high current applications, VCS is not really advantageous with MOSFETs. Running IGBTs or PN diodes that can be advantageous to get rid of current tailing and reverse recovery. But if you have a MOSFET type, majority carrier type converter, VVS is going to be the dominant loss mechanism unless you're going to extremely high current. Okay. What else can I say? Kind of regardless of where I am, let's look over here for FS greater than F naught. VI zero, or my load goes to more or less zero. I had impedance anywhere I draw my switching frequency, any vertical point I put. I've got a trend where as the load resistance gets larger, my impedance gets larger. Okay. Or at least I should. I really didn't draw this one very well. Let me resketch that. That mean again, so I under my sinusoidal approximation, I really only care about the magnitude of either of these at my switching frequency. So if I choose to place my switching frequency somewhere here, then all I care about is the magnitude for varying loads at that frequency. And what I can say is as the output goes close to a short circuit, I'm going to have a very small input impedance, and that's going to develop a lot of current coming out of the inverter. And as the output moves away from a short circuit towards an open circuit, I'm going to have a much higher impedance. I'm going to have much lower current coming out of the inverter. Okay. That's a good and advantageous characteristic to see on here. It means as I start delivering less power, I'm going to have less current flowing through the tank. When we look at other tanks, we'll find ones where as RE increases over a limited frequency range, ZN will drop, which means at lighter load, I have more current. My conduction losses can get bigger as I'm delivering less power to the output. My light load efficiency is going to be terrible. Okay. So here, really on both sides, magnitude of Zn increases at light load, which means peak conduction drops as P out drops. The way it should be, like I said, we'll find some converters where that's not the case, where peak conduction maybe stays constant as the output power changes. Full load, maybe that's acceptable, but at light load, you don't want to have the full load conduction losses when you're only delivering a small amount of power. Then other things I want to look at here, as we are drawing conclusions off of these plots, I want to think a little bit about how valid are those conclusions going to be, given that they're built on top of this sinusoidal approximation. Okay. Like I said, sinusoidal approximation really only valid when the tank is high Q resonant tank, right? When only the switching frequency component passes through it. If I look at the VI naught with a short circuit, I've got this really high Q resonance. And if my switching frequency is somewhere close to this resonance, I'm going to have almost no attenuation of it, but a ton of attenuation of all the harmonics. But as I go to really light load where I get this flat characteristic, I'm going to have equal attenuation of the fundamental and null harmonics. There, the sinusoidal approximation is going to kind of fall apart. All right. So let's say sinusoidal I need my RE to be much less than infinity. Otherwise, I have a flat transfer function, and for my fundamental and my harmonics, there's going to be no attenuation. The sinusoidal approximation won't be very good. And if I put FS kind of in the vicinity of F0, such that this peaking here where I have higher gain, my FS is somewhere inside of that, so it has higher gain at my switching frequency than my harmonic. Okay. And what I'm going to revise this to is say FS is kind of greater than or close to F0. Because even if I'm out here for loads which aren't approaching infinity, I'll still have this inductive type characteristic, which is still going to give me some attenuation of my higher frequencies relative to my switching frequency in here. In the case where everything's flat is covered by this. Okay. Things will still work out okay, even if I let my switching frequency go a little bit below the resonant frequency, because I'll still be inside this high Q resonance, where my fundamental will pass, my harmonics get attenuated. Where this thing will really start falling apart, we'll talk about after going through some different tanks, is if I put my switching frequency somewhere, for example, a third of the resonant frequency. If I put FS back here, that means that I'll have a lot of attenuation of the switching frequency, but its third harmonic will be right in the middle of this Q and have no attenuation. And then the behavior of this thing will completely change because it's actually going to be very well approximated by the sinusoidal approximation using the third harmonic instead of the sinusoidal approximation using the fundamental. And what you'll have is every switching action, you'll have three full resonant periods. Okay. If you start going way back here, all of this will fall apart. You'd have to change your modeling of it. Okay. And like I said, I'll bring that up after going through some different resonant tanks. We're not going to emphasize it right now because really you don't want to be down here anyway. Your losses are going to be terrible because you're going to lose ZBS because of the capacitive nature of it. Okay. Okay. And I'm out of time. So that is the series resonant converter. Briefly, just validating those plots using MATLAB to plot the impedance and the transfer function around F is equal to 1 or my switching frequency equal to my resonant frequency. We will pick up next time and talk about parallel resonant converter, as well as some different tanks, LCC and LLC, which are commonly used. Now that we've gone through it once, we'll just be able to look at these and determine characteristics kind of by inspection, this converter in different frequency ranges. We'll talk about that next class. See you Wednesday.